choppers in a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Rowdy's beagle Fred is too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, an ice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff, Mike can hardly steer.
Hey, watch out for the stuff!
When he oopers in a pontoon boat, fishing for Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys.
Yeah, okay. Dirty. Now, you guys, go to dieupers.com. You can actually buy that song. They've got all kinds of cool stuff. They got the world's largest outhouse display. It's all on US 41. If you go outside Fish and Frank's, make a left and continue north, you will find them all the way up in Michigan on the right-hand side of the same road.
Seriously.
Seriously, it's the exact same road. Literally, if you make a left out of our store, followed it all the way up into Michigan, and they're on the left. They're on the right side of the road, I believe.
That's funny.
The other side of the road, same street.
That's funny.
But the Die Youpers, one of the greatest fishing songs of all time. But go to Die Youpers, that's Youopers, youpers.com. And they do a lot of hunting camp songs, a lot of cool stuff. So we're using one of their songs, and I didn't actually pay for it, so I wanted to make sure somebody goes out and buys their stuff so they won't get mad at us.
All right.
I actually called them and asked them if I could use it.
Yeah.
They said, okay.
Cool.
Really nice people.
I mean, nice.
So buy whatever you can off the Die Youpers website. All right. Let's see. Or if you're up there, stop in and see the world's largest outhouse display. So
that's funny.
I just thought I got their site up here. Youper Innovations. I have no idea what that is.
Oh.
All kinds of cool stuff. All right. Anyway, back onto the fishandfranks.com. I went out, took my mom and dad. A few years ago, I bought my mom and dad a Beach Cat, which is a fiberglass pontoon boat. Because my mom can't really walk around very well at all. She's got one of those, you know, little cart things she pushes.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have, you don't have to step up or step down to get in it. And then I built a dock at my house so that it has, you can go to the seawall level, the dock level's a few inches down, and then I have another level down. So whatever the tide is, she can kind of walk right onto the boat. And then I put a railing on the front so she can lean into it and hold on and be able to fish without having to keep her balance. And if you're going to put one of those railings on the front of your boat, you want to hit it right about your belt buckle or a little bit higher. You don't want to be able to sit on it. You want somebody to be able to lean into it and catch it on their stomach so they don't flip over it.
Right.
So it's got to be a little bit higher than what you normally would want it. I would say in that 38-40 inch range. But I threw bolted it right through the hull. I put nuts and bolts and washers, not screws, in it because I didn't want anybody leaning on it, have a screw pulled out. So anyway, went to take them out, and mom's been sick, so she hasn't been out in the water much, so dad comes over and starts the boat. But I keep telling dad, buy the non-ethanol gas. Marathon's has it, Fisherman's Village has got it, Burnt Store, any place in the water sells only non-ethanol. And Marathon gas stations here in town sell the non-ethanol gas. But the ethanol, the motors are made to run on ethanol. They will absolutely run fine and won't hurt the motor at all. That's not the problem. They will run on regular non-ethanol or ethanol gas. The motors do fine with it. But the reason it doesn't hurt our cars is because
you're burning it up all day long.
You go through the gas. You're exchanging it out. It doesn't have time to sit in the bottom of the tank and turn to jelly.
Right.
So ethanol gas left in a line, in a carburetor, in a fuel injection system, turns to gum and guck. And you can't get it out. It just gums everything up and you're done. Regular gasoline without the ethanol in it does not do that. It will do it, but it might take 3 or 4 years for it to do it. Whereas with the ethanol gas, it will do that in a matter of weeks.
You've almost got instantly.
A couple of months to a few weeks, and you're done. but he wouldn't spend the extra $1, $1.50 of gas. So now it's going to be, I'm sure, $600 to $900, because they got to pull the entire exhaust manifold off, the vacuum chambers out, clean all that, maybe do the injectors. I don't know. It's going to be
expensive. You're saying the boat didn't run very well?
No, the boat did. We got right out from my house on the river, and so I said, I got to keep idling. So I idled back to the house, took the water fuel separator off, put a new water fuel separator on, because sometimes that'll fix it. Could be the water filter gets plugged up. But I got 10 micron, and that's not quite fine enough to keep the stuff out. It's got to be like a 5 micron or 2 micron filter in order to keep all that ethanol from gunking into your motor. And even then, it doesn't really help. But it wasn't it. We went back out. The boat didn't run. So anchored up off one of the islands out there and said, well, nothing else. We'll just catch some catfish and have fun. You know, mom and dad. And my sister was on with her grandkids. And her grandkids are like 18 years old now. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's just weird. You know, I've got, you know, my sister brings not her kids, but her grandkids, and they're 18. You know, I'm like, God, what happened to us? All right. And enough about the old fogey stuff.
Yeah, so, I had that conversation with my sister the other day, and I said, you know, we're getting old. And she says, why? I said, because we're sitting here discussing our bills.
Yes.
She's like, she started cussing at me.
That's when you're in your 40s and stuff, and you maybe your 50s. Mm-hmm. And it goes from talking about, okay, all kinds of fun stuff, talking about your bills and, you know, jobs and stuff like that, to when you get in your 60s, somehow or another, it turns to your health.
All right.
You know, and for some reason, other people feel very comfortable telling strangers about what their butt is doing, you know, and how many things happen to them and all the horrible stuff that's going on with their body. And you're like, really? You know, you might want to keep that to yourself.
Yeah. There's some stuff that we just don't need to know.
Yeah. You know, I'll talk about it every once in a while, but mostly I don't need people to know what parts aren't functioning as well as others. Give you a hint, pancreas in my case. All right. So anyway, let's see. Back out. We get out there. We're going to just stop and catch some catfish, because I don't care what any of you guys say. They hit, they bend the rod, they fight good. And what was really weird, we're out there, and I went back into shallows because I thought maybe there's a chance of redfish or something, because out there there's an island, and it kind of slopes off there. And you and I have been there catching fish.
Right.
And you can catch often...
It's a catch-all spot.
Redfish and trout and snook and ladyfish and jacks, because where it slopes down, it's got a little bit of a trough, then it comes up on a pretty shallow sandbar going out towards the main body of the river. We started out back there, catfish, small ones. And so I said, oh, the heck with this. I pulled the anchor up, and I let the wind and current take me up. So I was just on the edge of the sandbar, right next to the 15 feet of water. Out there, it's all 10, 12, 15, 18 feet deep, right in front of Harbor Heights. And threw the lines out there, we started catching more catfish. Well, all of a sudden, Jesse hooks one. Sets the rod bends way over, and I saw something go screaming by from the right, left to the right, and I could see it about 4 or 5 feet under the water, just shimmering through the water. I went, man, you got a little shark. It was the biggest catfish. It wouldn't even fit my gripper, because I use those catfish grippers, so catching catfish is fun. You just grab them with the gripper, take your pliers, you know, do a little bongos on their head and let them go. And so they're fun to catch catfish. I'm not handling them. I'm not touching them. I just catch them and let them go. It's the whole catch and release thing.
Right.
But I thought it was a little shark. I thought it was like a little bull shark or a little black tip, and went screaming across in front of me. And all I could see was the shimmering kind of grayish look. And I've never thought I'd ever mistake a catfish for a shark. Literally. But my grippers wouldn't even fit around it. It was so big around the shoulders.
Yeah. Well, and I can understand that. When you got a sail cat that girthy, that's pretty impressive.
I would say very, very close to 30 inches long.
Wow.
So he gets that up, lands it. I end up having to use a boga grip on it because I couldn't hold it with my grippers. So I grabbed it with the fish lipper and got the hook out. We actually took a picture of it, put it back in the water, because it's the first time I ever mistook a catfish for a shark, or a shark for a catfish. And all of a sudden, caught a few more catfish, and it was pretty steady, one every couple minutes here and there. And just something, you know, mom was having a good time, and mom and dad were having fun, so, you know, all good. And Everything quit. All, nothing biting. And this is going on about, I sat back, had a cigarette, and I'm like, wow. And I drank some coffee, and about 10 minutes, I'm starting to go, well, I don't know, what the going on, Dad? And I said, what do you think, you know? He said, well, we'll give it a couple more minutes and see what happens. And what happened was a bull shark moved in. Right. And I think it scared the catfish off, because when I was doing all those shark charters, I would go through the same scenario, put the chum bags out, and catfish after catfish after catfish, and then all of a sudden you'd have a dead time, and I forgot about it. It's been so long since I did a charter, you know, it's been, God, 15 years, or 10 or 15 years since I did a charter, that when all that stops, there's a reason.
Yep.
Two notes that are really freaky. All right, and it was true, about a 4 to 5 foot bull shark head. All of a sudden the rod goes down. It's my sister's grandson, so I don't know what that makes him to me. Maybe nothing, I don't know. Kids got the rod. Rod's all bent over. It's a 10 to 20 pound class rod. It's not like a shark stick.
Right.
You know, we were catching catfish. So off it goes, and all of a sudden I'm looking at it going, I go, oh, it ain't going to slow down, so I'll go get the anchor. And I looked at it, there's really plenty of line left. I'm not worried about it. So I went back and actually took the time to pull the anchor up. Well, by the time I get back up to the front of the boat, the boat's just starting to drift with the current. You know, I've got the anchor up inside, and the boat's drifting with the current. He's got probably half a spool of line left, and I'm looking out, and I see the crab trap. I said, pull out of it. And he pulls, and the crab trap ball pulls. I'm like, damn, Dad, get on the motor. So Dad gets on the boat. He's running it. We go up, and I'm pointing at the crab trap ball, and you can see it going. I'm saying, reel, get up close to it. And I get up, grab the crab trap buoy up, do about two wraps to unwrap it around that crab trap buoy. I said, start reeling. He reels the line up, and I look, and the next crab trap buoy, every time he pulls, the crab trap ball is bouncing. I'm like, one more up there. So we go up, we get to the next crab trap ball, to pick it up, and it is wound and knotted around there.
Oh,
literally feeling the fish pulling on it, and I'm trying to hold it up, and the trick is to grab the line light enough to get it around the ball, but not wrapped in your fingers, or around your wrist, or around your arm.
Yeah, any body part.
So I finally get it undone on the second crab trap ball, and luckily had it out, and there was no crab traps in the way the fish went that time. And we got him up next to the boat, got a few pictures, and like I say, 4 to 5 foot bull shark.
That's cool.
Absolute bull shark, though.
That's really cool. That'd be neat. I mean, catch one like that on light tackle and no steel leader is even more fun.
No, it was on those AFW little steel leaders.
Oh, okay.
Because we had originally left the dock. We were going to go out to Marker 2 and do black tips, cobia, stuff like that.
Gotcha. So you were prepared for it to an extent.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, the catfish aren't going to care if there's a steel leader or anything else.
No, they are not.
They don't care. So I had the AFW bleeding steel leaders on there, which are awesome. It's the same one I used forever. And it was cool because I had the barbs bent down, so I was able to knock the hook out of the bull shark without him taking him out of the water, because he was too heavy for me to lift up.
Right.
I mean, if this was 25 years ago, I could have grabbed him and picked him right up, but it's not 25 years ago. I'm not getting involved. You got a nice life down there, bull shark? Good. Glad for you. I got a good life up here. Let's not get too close.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's not mix the two together.
Yeah. You have yours. I'll have mine. Let's go away. So anyway, I was able to knock the hook out actually with a paddle.
Really?
I was pulling the line tight, and I got the paddle down in where the hook was, and I was able to pull the line and then get a quick flip to the paddle, and without having the barb there, popped it right out. It's actually...
See, and that's where having that barb flattened down helps so much. I mean, that thing is probably one of your many good ideas that you've had, but that one is so amazing.
Go ahead, suck up. You're not getting a raise. I can't afford it right now.
No, I know that. It's all good. It's just that, you know, it's funny because people look at you when you have three heads when you're trying to explain it to them, then they go out and they do it, and then they come back and go, wow, that worked out really well. It made it so much easier. You know.
And you don't need it doing it on all fish. You do it on some, not on others. Sharks is just one you do it with.
Right.
But we had such a good time, and we actually never got more than three minutes from the house.
Nice.
You know, and was able to do all that. And so I got it back up, and my sister's grandson, his girlfriend, had never been on a boat before. So I said, well, listen, I haven't run my boat in a while. Well, I got to go down and get some fuel because I don't know how much gas I got left in the boat. And because I don't have gas gauges or anything like that, I just kind of guess. And so I said, you know, I'll run down and get some gas in the boat. And went down to Fisherman's Village, nice run down there, you know. And there was a nice school of mackerel hitting right there. I didn't have anything tied up on the rods. I had rods on the boat, but nothing tied up. And so I'm watching these fish hit. I got a flash of yellow water fish because I couldn't tell if they were ladyfish or mackerel. But I saw the birds hovering, feeding. Right. And then I get a little flash of yellow with mackerel, and I'm trying to tie up. By the time I got tied, they had sounded down. Never saw them again. So
Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
That's why you always have one pole ready.
And, yeah, I should know that, right?
I know. But
I was just going to get gas. So
I was just going to the beach.
Yeah. So I get out there. We get into Fishville, and we get gas. And it took 30 gallons of gas, which means I had 40 left. So I was actually in pretty good shape. I got a 70-gallon fuel tank. But I went out, and I was going by the markers on the way out. I'm going to head back, and I was just kind of putting along. And all of a sudden, I saw a little bait flip. I said, hey, what the heck? Throw the net. And it wasn't even all the way out at the end. And so come back around, and she had been talking about going to throw the cast net. I said, well, if you really want to throw a cast net, we'll do it right here on this marker. See if we can catch some bait. She went to grab my cast net and go, I can't lift it. Because all she wanted to do was throw a cast net. She was going to throw a cast net. I guess mine was a little bigger than what hers was.
A little bit.
Because she was used to doing it as a kid.
Right.
And as a little kid, you've got those little, you know, she said it was an 8-foot net, which I'm sure was a 4-foot with an 8-foot spread.
Right.
And mine is not very big. It's only a 10, but I have 1.6 per pound 10, and it does pretty good for me. My boat, there's not a lot of room to throw a cast net because all the chairs and stuff like that. So that 10 I can still throw right off the side of my boat. I don't need a big backswing. So she could do it. So I got the boat back around. I was doing a nice drift, went right by it, threw on the downside of the tide, and literally couldn't hardly pick up the net.
Wow.
I mean, there was thread fins and greenbacks in it, and it was so heavy I couldn't pick it up. And I didn't make that good a throw either. It wasn't a pancake. It was just a little plop, I think, out of the 10. It was probably a decent throw for a 6.
Right.
You know, but it dropped right there, went right down next to the marker, skinned it going down, and went to pick it up, went, oh my God. I ended up dumping half
what
of
am
it
I
out,
do with
half
this?
On the deck. And, I mean, it was and I felt bad because I had a lot of bait on the deck, and I was putting half of it outside of the boat and half of it inside the boat. And I finally got a fairly good pile, probably a couple hundred pieces or 200-300 pieces on that were on the deck, and I'm dumping the rest back in the water, and I got Jesse scooping bait up with the net, putting it in the live well, and I'm just throwing handfuls back overboard, trying to keep as many alive as I can. And so I said, well, we got all this bait. I said, we'll go over. And usually March and April, I like fishing Rocky Creek. Lot of snook coming out of that, bunch of fish, a lot of fun, very few boats, nobody goes there. So I go over into there, and there's a boat sitting at the mouth, and I come up, sorry guys, do you want me left or right? Oh, we haven't rigged yet, you know, it's all cool. Hey, Frank, you know, like, okay. So I said, you guys want some bait? I mean, I got a live well full of bait, and that live well works awesome.
Yeah,
I think 98% of them were live because I was able to run the boat, my high-speed pickups. I was able to get all the scales and everything out of it, and got there 98% of everything I'd put in live well was still live.
Nice.
And so they're like, what do you mean? I said, you got a live well? They said, yeah. I said, turn it on. What do you got, some frozen drip? I said, turn the live well on. I handed them about 4 nets full of bait, and
they had to be happy.
Yeah, they were fishing right at the mouth of Rocky Creek. Nice couple comes in all the time. And they were just out messing around. So I went back up inside to fish the first bend, and we were there 15 minutes, nothing. I put the lines out because I always fish first and I chum later. So nothing had been hitting. So I put about 8 pieces of bait in the live well, threw it out on the chum bat, and nothing. Took another 8 pieces, threw them out. And I go through and I grab the ones that are kind of half bellying, throw them in there and throw them out. More and threw them out, and all of a sudden one snook blew up, grabbed a rod, threw on there, hook up. I mean, boosh, big blow up, cast the bait right in there, and I mean, it was a great cast. I mean, it really was. It was probably 50, 60 feet away, and I was able to drop the bait right on top of that. And Jesse was going, "Boy, you can really cast." She goes, my sister goes, "Well, he is a professional."
I'm like, nice.
I'm thinking to myself, you have no idea how lucky that was.
Right.
Dropped it in her, handed him the rod. Right as I handed him the rod, boom, it bowed over. Fish came up once, did a jump, went down. I said, walk back. And he doesn't know what I'm talking about. I want him to walk back along the boat so he could drag that fish away from the mangroves. Wrapped a root, broke off.
Bummer.
And that, literally, and then I moved inside. I did two more curves, not another blow up, not another hit, nothing. Went up into up by 75, and all my baits started dying. We went to a little creek on the north side and got in there, looked, my live well, my bait's starting to die. So we caught one catfish. I got out of there. I have no idea why. Why would my bait die?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all.
I mean, there's enough salinity up there. There hasn't been really any rain. The only thing I can figure is maybe it's so hot and with these really super low tides with the full moon that there's maybe some excess methane gas building up right there.
Could have been. Because it's, I mean, where that comes out back behind it is literally a half square mile of flats that are a foot deep.
Right. That's about the only thing that would make sense to me.
So, left there, went back up to the house, and Terry wasn't feeling good. That's my wife. And so I left everything running, still had fairly good live well full of bait, had shrimp in the bucket, all that kind of stuff when we went out earlier. And said, "You want to go out after dark? You know, as the tide will be changing around 6-7 o'clock, we can just go out, see if we can catch some fish." And she says, "I don't want to be trapped on a boat. I don't want to be, you know, more than that far away from the little room in the house." You
know? Right.
So I went down, loaded everything up. I got to remember the name of that boat float thing I got. Because that thing is so awesome now.
You got it fixed and customed out for your situation.
So, I mean, it's just cool to be able to just drive up on it and done.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Shut the boat off and do whatever rinsing down I want and walk away. So
pretty awesome.
Anyway, but that was my day. Have you been out fishing?
Nope, not since last week with you.
So,
I mean, a little bit behind the house, but I mostly sit and watch.
Going out with Danny Latham, it was pretty awesome. When you hooked that first tarpon up Boca Grande Pass, now we were drifting baits out there with pinch-on weights, and oh my God, I think we got them in now.
No.
No, there should be in that box as it came today.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, pinch-on fever out there. Oh my God, everybody has to have pinch-on weights.
Except for now, everyone started deep-dropping today.
I've got enough pinch on weights to sink a 40-foot boat on the way.
It's gonna last us about another 5 years.
Yeah, because we had them for 20 years, and I think I'm the only one that ever used them.
I'd use them on occasion, but just not the way these guys were. It's like, wow.
So, yeah, they bought us out in a day.
Literally.
So, anyway, out there fishing, that first fish on came up. What do you think happened on that second jump? That's the one you lost.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I felt like I bowed good enough, or curtsied, as you would say. You know, I'm honestly not sure why I lost it.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like you were doing everything all right. But I think that the problem was it did that tarpon came up out of the water. Nice fish. I would say about 80 pounds. The first one looked around 80 pounds. Came up out of the water, went down, and then immediately came back up again.
Yeah.
And that's where it's tougher. You've got a little time between jumps, but when you and I don't get to do it that much.
No. And it's a U-turn, and wow.
He just hit the water and immediately came right back up for the second jump. And I think that's what surprised you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you actually got your rod out far enough to do it. Now, I was lucky with the one I had because it was small enough where I could one-hand the rod. And it was somewhere between 60 and 80 pounds. So when that fish came up, I just let go with the hand I was reeling with, put my arm, took a half step forward. Because when I saw the line coming up in the boat, and I'm lucky because I can see better than you can. So I take a half step back on the deck. I learned that from Austin. And I took a step backwards on the deck when I saw the line coming up. And then as the fish came up, I took a half step forward and just put my one hand out, let him do his jump, and then brought it back and started fighting the fish. But Austin clued me in because he watches the line when he does it on from land.
Mm-hmm.
He says as soon as he sees the line coming up, he takes a step back. When the fish comes out of the water, he steps forward.
Oh, there you go.
And that gives you a
lot. Wonder if that was a life lesson of stepping off the seawall at one point or another.
Probably. Probably.
I'm wondering.
I can see Austin doing that.
I could see me doing that.
But, yeah, I said, man, that was a great idea, and I just did it on Danny's boat. Because standing on the deck, I had a lot of room to take that half step back, and so when the fish jumped, I was able to re-step forward and not walk off the boat.
Right. No, I like that. That's a good idea. That's a really, really pretty cool observation.
But, you know, and it's funny. I had to learn that from a kid who figured it out when he was, you know, 16 or 17. It's like, damn.
This goes to show you that we always learn new stuff. I mean, I get refreshed on stuff all the time, and I get taught new stuff all the time, both from young and old fishermen. So it's good. That keeps us going, and it allows us to share stuff like this right now to other people.
So, but now you say we were all freelining using spinning tackle and using 5,000, 6,000 size reels with rods that had an upper monoline class rating of anywhere from 25 to 40 pounds. Now, what are they? Now they're deep dropping. Can you still use the same tackle, or did everything change?
They went over to conventional. They went over to conventional, and they're using the where they're marking their line and stuff like that, trying to keep it at that depth. And the, you know, if it's 60 feet of water and you've got 30 feet of fish, they've got it marked in 10-foot increments, or actually they might even have it. No, I think they're 10-foot increments because of the rods. Most of the rods they use are 7-foot or even 8-foot, and they'll mark it off of that and use blue line, green line, red line, whatever.
They use thread, and they take a needle and actually put thread through the braided line to mark the different depths on it.
Yep. And then that way they can say reel up to the red line, and they know that it reeled in 4 feet of line or 6 feet of line, however they've got it measured out to.
Right.
To try to keep it right inside that school of fish.
What kind of reel would be good for this?
Honestly, if it were me, I'd be using a Fathom 30 or 40 with 50-pound mono on it.
Okay. And what rod?
I would use I like that Bill Fisher 17 to 40 casting for that conventional stuff. It's a 7-foot. It's got a real soft taper, or a real fast tip, I should say. It's not a taper. It's just got a really soft tip on it.
I like the
but a lot
I like
of backbone.
The Star better. It's not quite as durable as the Bill Fisher, but I like the feel of it better.
Which one?
That 7-foot trolling rod, Star trolling rod.
Is that the Aerial, or is it the?
I think it might.
They have the Stellar Boat.
Stellar Boat.
Okay. The Stellar Boat's a nice one too.
Just a different feel because the one you like has a real light tip on it, super super light tip.
Right.
So you can actually see the bite more than feel it.
Right.
And the one I like, you can't see the bite as well, but I can feel it better. So, because I can feel that rod just tunk, 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 and it's the tiniest tap in the world. For all you out there, a crappie hits harder than a tarpon does in the pass.
Yep, in most instances.
Every once in a while, one rails you, takes you right to your knees, but it's the exception to the rule. Because when the tarpon hits and you're deep dropping, they go down, they find something to eat, they grab it, then they start swimming towards the surface.
Yeah.
So they're creating slack in the line. So you don't know you have a fish. And if you're one of those people that goes, gee, did I get a hit? What do you think? I think I got a hit. I think that was a fish.
It's over.
You already lost the fish. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel another thunk, and that's your weight hitting the end of the line again.
Yeah.
And that's when you think, oh, my God, I got a bite, because it was twice as hard as when the fish actually picked it up.
Yep.
So the good first rule of thumb, if you want to catch fish in Boca Grande, reel until you see your weight or your hook or whatever it is, until you see your rigging, visually see it, don't stop reeling. Reel as fast as you possibly can. If you imagine you got a hit, do it.
Yep.
And don't stop reeling until you actually see your rig, because if that fish is coming up, what's if he's coming all the way up to jump? Your bait could literally be 10 feet below you, and then a tarpon breaches the water, hooked to your line, and you never got a hook into him.
Yep. It just sat in his mouth, and he opened it and threw it right back out at you.
Sorry. Yeah. So it's better to reel on 30 imaginary fish and actually catch one than it is to go, gee, I think that was a bite. I think I had a bite, and lose every one of them.
Yep.
So anyway, so you're deep dropping. You got 50-pound mono. We got a 7-foot rod, depending upon the action you like, kind of like kingfish trolling rod. A 30 to 40 size reel with 50-pound mono again, going down to 60-pound leader,
mm-hmm.
using a 4-ounce to 6-ounce sinker.
Yeah.
About 5 feet away from the bait, 6 feet?
Probably, yeah. Right in that range. Some of the guys got them tied up. I mean, there's a couple guys out there. There's still a handful of guys out there that are doing the jig thing, but they're, you know, doing it the legal way where they've run it through, like we've experimented with, to try to keep the hook horizontal to the jig head or below the jig head, and they're sticking fish, they just aren't landing any of them.
So,
you know,
but about a 7-aught hook, crab,
mm-hmm. crab, squirrel fish, or shrimp are pretty much your three primary baits out there.
Sand brim, I saw white bait, I saw thread fins. I mean, you pick a bait, somebody was trying it out there that day.
Absolutely.
But you get it down, but the thing is you feel this tiny... Did you hear that, boys? I was tapping my mic. That shows you how light that bite is.
Right.
If you couldn't hardly hear that, if you barely heard it or you think you heard it, you should have been reeling the whole time. That's real. And but they're down deep right now. They're feeding deeper. And it seems like when they start the into Boca Grande Pass, you can feed them better on the free line, the shallower baits, the drop back baits. But you get the middle of the season, and it's all about getting deep.
Yep.
And then now in a couple of 2-3 weeks, it's going to be right back up to the way it was when it started. You're going to be back doing better on free line, drop backs, all this kind of stuff, rather than the deep drops.
Yeah, the new moon and the full moon kind of seem to signify that. So it's about every 2 weeks. You know, that seems to be when that type of action happens. But they are also, those fish are splitting up the last 2 or 3 days. By 9 o'clock in the morning, some of those fish are leaving the pass, going up on the hill, and even on the other side of the hill, heading over towards Boquilla, Bull Bay, that whole center area.
Yeah.
These are the straits.
Check the Boca Grande Pass page, and I've got it literally done with different colors, where fishing in the pass, fishing the hill, and overall tarpon fishing. There's three different color rings on there, and I've put it on there so you can see where we're talking about. It's on the Boca Grande Pass page. But we did a tarpon map, and we've got a new tarpon map up just today, so you can check the fishing report. At the bottom of the fishing report, we go through all the different places talking about stuff. Then we do a freshwater, a red tide, a tarpon, and a bait. So you know where the bait is, you know what's going on with the red tide, you know where the tarpon are. And we write stuff about tarpon, but we also do a overall map, and I put red, yellow, white dots on it so you can tell where the stuff is. There's a legend at the top to tell you about it, but check that tarpon map. Anything else you can think of that we should be talking about right now? We're going to be back on the area fishing report. We missed it last week. Everybody's running and jumping.
Right.
And this isn't a show that's done, you know, we're going to be doing them more on a regular basis because we're actually going to be getting paid for this pretty soon. Somebody wants to syndicate this garbage. I don't know why they'd want to, but they're going to. So, as we get into syndication, we have to actually do it because we're going to get paid for it.
Yeah.
Right now, these are just stuff we do for our customers to give you an idea of what's going on out there.
We're still going to do it for our customers. And that's what the passion is about. It just happens to get a little paycheck involved.
We're going to have two shows a week. The Get Ready for the Weekend on Thursdays, and then the Area Fishing Report. Theirs are going to be done no matter what else we're doing. But we're also going to be doing a whole bunch of them for radio syndication, being playing on AM and FM radio stations all over the country. So that'll be interesting.
It'll be fun.
So anyway, that's what's going on with, and the name of all this is Radio Fishing. So that's a federally registered trademark of mine, Radio Fishing, along with Fish and Frank and Fish and Franks. They all belong to me. You know, I was smart enough to put a federal trademark on them.
You are Fish and Frank.
Yes, I are.
You are Fish and Frank.
And Radio Fishing was a name I like, so we trademarked that. So all the shows, if you're hearing something and it's radio fishing somewhere, that is actually us.
Nice.
So anyway, so that's going to be under that umbrella. I guess that's about it.
I think that's about it.
Okay. And let's see.
And those tarpon are changing every day, so always call the shop because we'll help you answer your questions in person. Nice.
I couldn't help it.
I think I need more line.
You need more line, yeah. I'm out of line.
We're in a pontoon boat, fishing for Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. It's a little bit like heaven.